2. Red London. Back at the Wandering Road, the crowd had thinned, but the wolfhound was still sprawled in the exact same position by the fire. Lila couldn't help but wonder if it was alive. She crossed to the hearth and knelt slowly, hand hovering over the creature's chest.
"I already checked," said a voice behind her.
Lila looked up to see Lennos fidgeting nervously.
"He's okay."
Lila straightened. "Where is everybody?" Lennos cocked his head toward a corner table.
"Strauss and Tav have got a game going."
The men were playing Sankt, and from what she could tell, they hadn't been playing long because neither looked that angry and both still had all their weapons and most of their clothes. Lila wasn't a fan of the game, mostly because after 4 months of watching the sailors win and lose, she felt no closer to understanding the rules well enough to play, let alone cheat.
"Vastri went out," Lennos continued, as Lila ambled toward the table. "Cobus went to bed."
"And Alucard?" she asked, trying to keep her tone flat with disinterest. She took up Strauss's drink and downed it, ignoring the first mate's muttered protests. Strauss threw down a card with a hooded figure holding 2 chalices.
"Too late,"
he said to her, keeping his eyes on the table and the cards.
"Captain said he was retiring."
"Awfully early," mused Lila. Tav chuckled and mumbled something, but she couldn't decipher it. He was from somewhere at the edge of the Empire, and the more he drank, the less intelligible his accent became. And since Lila's default when she didn't understand something was to keep her mouth shut, she simply walked away. After a few steps, she stopped and turned back to Lennos, drawing the palm fire from her coat. The light was already fading, and she hadn't thought to ask if there was a way to restore it, or if it was a one-time-use kind of charm, which seemed wasteful. "Here," she said, tossing Lennos the orb.
"What's this for?" he asked, surprised.
"Keeps the shadows at bay," she said, heading for the stairs. Lennos stood there, staring down at the orb, perplexed by either the sphere itself or the fact that the Saros had just given him a gift. Why had she given it to him?
"Getting soft," grumbled a voice in her head.
Not Kell's or Baron's. No, this voice was all hers. As Lila climbed the stairs, she produced a narrow bottle of wine she'd nicked. Not from the inn or the market, she knew better than to steal from warded tents, but from Alucard's own stash aboard the spire. The captain's room sat across from hers, the doors facing like duelers, which seemed fitting. But when she reached the doors, she paused between them, presented with the question of which she'd come for, and which she planned to open. Lila hovered there in the hall. She wasn't sure why she was drawn to his room more than hers. Perhaps because she was restless, being back in this city for the first time, a place at once strange and familiar. Perhaps because she wanted to slip back into the comfort of English. Perhaps because she wanted to learn more about the tournament and Alucard's participation. Or perhaps out of simple habit. This was how they spent most nights at sea, after all. A bottle of wine and a magical fire, each trying to pry secrets from the other without giving up any of their own. Had Lila become so accustomed to the dance that she actually missed it?
"Hang this," she thought. "What a waste of life to stand around and think so much on every little thing. What did it matter why she wanted to see the captain? She simply did."
And so, casting motive aside, she reached out to knock, only to stop when she heard footsteps from within, coming briskly toward the door. Her thief's sense twitched, and her body moved before her mind, boots silently retreating 1 stride, then 2, before sliding smoothly behind the corner of the hallway's nearest bend. She had no reason to hide, but she'd been doing it so long the gesture came naturally. Besides,
Hiding was simply seeing without being seen, and that gave her the upper hand. Nothing to be lost by it, and often something to be gained. An instant later the door swung open, and Alucard Emery stepped into the hall. The first thing she noticed was his silence. The captain of the Night Spire normally made a certain amount of noise. His jewelry jangled and his weapons clanked. His steel-heeled boots announced every step. And even when his attire was quiet, Alucard himself usually hummed. Lila had mentioned it once, and he simply said he'd never been a fan of quiet. She'd thought him incapable of it, but as he made his way down the hall, his steps marked only by the gentle creak of the floorboards, she realized that before, he'd always meant to be loud. Another aspect of the role he was playing, now cast aside, replaced by what? He was fully dressed, but not in his usual clothes. Alucard had always favored fine, flashy things, but now he looked less like a pirate captain and more like an elegant shadow. He'd traded the blue coat he'd worn ashore for a charcoal half-cloak, a simple silver scarf at his throat. He wore no obvious weapons, and the sapphire was gone from his brow, along with all the rings from his fingers save one, the thick silver band shaped like a feather. His brassy brown hair was combed back beneath a black cap, and Lila's first thought was that, pared down, he looked younger, almost boyish. But where was he going? And why was he going in disguise? Lila trailed him down the stairs of the inn and out into the night, close enough to keep track and far enough away to avoid notice. She might have spent the last 4 months as a privateer, but she had spent years as a shadow. She knew how to blend into the dark, how to tail a mark, how to breathe and move with the current of the night instead of against it. And Alucard's steps might have been light, but hers were silent. She'd expected him to head for the market, overflowing with people, or the web of streets that traced lines of light away from the river. Instead, he hugged its banks, following the red glow of the aisle and the main concourse past the palace to a bridge on the far side. It was made of pale stone and accented with copper. Copper railings and copper pillars and sculpted copper canopies. The whole thing formed a kind of shining tunnel. Lila hesitated at its base. The entire length of the bridge beneath the canopies was well lit, the metal reflecting and magnifying the light. And though people were strewn along it, mostly in pairs and groups, collars turned up against the cold, few actually seemed to be making their way across to the opposite bank. Blending in would be nearly impossible. A few merchants had set up stalls beneath the lanterns, haloed by mist and candlelight, and Lila hung back to see if Alucard was heading for one of those. But he made his way briskly across, eyes ahead, and Lila was forced to either follow or be left behind. She set off after him, fighting to keep her pace leisurely, ignoring the glittering stalls and the patterned metal ceiling, but not so pointedly as to give away her purpose. It was a wasted effort in the end. Alucard never once looked back. Walking beneath the copper canopies, she saw that they were dappled to look like trees, starlight shining through the leaves, and Lila thought once more what a strange world she'd stumbled into, and how glad she was to be there. Alucard crossed the entire length of the bridge and descended a grand set of stairs to the southern bank of the aisle. Lila had only been on this side once, when she and Kel took Rye to the sanctuary, and she'd never given much thought to what else lined this other darker half of the city. Shops and taverns, she would have guessed. Perhaps a shadier version of the northern bank. She would have been wrong. This half of London was quiet by comparison. The sanctuary rose solemnly from a bend in the river, and beyond a boundary of bankside shops and inns, the city gave way to gardens and orchards, and beyond these, to manor homes. Lila's old stomping grounds in Mayfair and Regent Park paled in comparison to this London's southern bank. Elegant carriages pulled by magnificent steeds dotted street after street of grand estates, high-walled and furnished with marble and glass and gleaming metal. The evening mist itself seemed to glitter with wealth. Ahead, Alucard had quickened his pace, and Lila picked hers up to match. Far fewer people were on these streets, which made tailing him a good deal harder, but his attention was fixed on the road ahead. As far as Lila could tell, there was nothing to see here, no deals to do, no trouble to get into, nothing but houses, half the windows dark. Finally, Alucard turned off the road, stepping through an intricate gate and into a courtyard lined with shrubbery and bordered by trees, their branches winter bare. When Lila caught up, she saw that the curling metalwork of the gate formed an ornate E, and then she looked inside and caught her breath. The floor of the courtyard was a mosaic of glittering blue and silver stone. She hovered in the shadow of the gate as Alucard made his way up the walk and watched as, halfway to the door, he paused to collect himself. He dragged his cap from his head and shoved it into the satchel on his shoulder, tousled his hair, flexed his hands, muttered something she couldn't hear, and then picked up again, his stride calm and confident as he hopped up a short set of steps, then rang a bell. A moment later, one of the two front doors swung open and a steward appeared. On seeing Alucard, he bowed.
"Lord Emery," he said, stepping aside. "Welcome home."
Lila stared in disbelief. Alucard wasn't visiting the master of the house. He was the master of the house. Before he could step inside, a girl appeared in the doorway, squealed with delight, and threw her arms around his neck. "Luke!" she cried as he swung her into the air. The girl couldn't be more than 12 or 13, and she had his wavy brown curls and dark eyes.
"Anissa!"
He broke into a smile Lila had never seen before. Not on him. It wasn't the proud grin of a captain or the mischievous smirk of a rake, but the absolute adoration of an older brother. She'd never had any siblings, so she didn't understand the look, but she recognized the simple, blind love, and it twisted something in her. And then, as suddenly as the girl had launched herself forward, she pulled away, affecting the mock frown Lila had seen on Alucard's own mouth so many times. "Where is Asa?" demanded the girl, and Lila tensed, not at the question itself, but the fact she'd asked it in English. No one spoke that tongue in Red London, not unless they were trying to impress the royalty, or they were royalty. Alucard chuckled.
"Of course," he said, crossing the threshold. 3 years away from home, and your first question is about the cat."
They disappeared inside, and Lila found herself staring at the front door as it closed. Alucard Emery, captain of the Night Spire, tournament magician, and Red London Royal? Did anyone know? Did everyone know? Lila knew she should be surprised, but she wasn't. She'd known from the moment she met Alucard aboard the Night Spire that he was playing a part. It was just a matter of uncovering the man behind it. Now she knew the truth, and the truth gave her a card to play. And when it came to men like Alucard Emery, any advantage was worth taking. A decorative wall circled the house, and Lila managed to hoist herself up with the help of a low branch. Perched on top, she could see through the great glass windows, many of which were unshuttered. Her silhouette blended into the tracery of trees at her back as she skirted the house, following the glimpses of Alucard and his sister
as they made their way into a grand room with tall windows and a blazing hearth, and a pair of glass doors on the far wall leading to an expansive garden. She dropped into a crouch atop the wall as a man came into view. He had Alucard's coloring, and his jaw was the same square cut, but it looked hard without Alucard's smile. The man looked older by several years.
"Barriss," said Alucard by way of greeting.
The windows were cracked open, and the word reached Lila through the parted glass. The man, Barriss, strode forward, and for an instant it looked as though he might strike Alucard, but before he could, the girl lunged in front of her brother like a shield. There was something terribly practiced about the gesture, as if she'd done it many times before, and Barriss stilled his hand in midair. On one of his fingers, Lila saw a duplicate of Alucard's feather ring before his hand fell back to his side.
"Go, Anissa," he ordered.
The girl hesitated, but Alucard gave her a gentle smile and a nod, and she backed out of the room. The moment they were alone, Barriss snapped.
"Where is Cobus?"
"I pushed him overboard," said Alucard.
Disgust spilled across the man's face, and Alucard rolled his eyes.
"Saints, Barriss, it was a joke.
Your moody little spy is safely housed at an inn with the rest of my crew."
Barriss sneered faintly at the mention of the spire's men.
"That look does nothing for you, brother," said the captain. "And the night spire sails for the crown. To insult my post is to insult House Maresh, and we wouldn't want to do that."
"Why are you here?"
growled Barriss, taking up a goblet. But before he could drink, Alucard flicked his wrist, and the wine abandoned its cup, rising in a ribbon, coiling in on itself as it did. Between one instant and the next, it had hardened into a block of ruby-colored ice. Alucard plucked the crystal from the air and considered it absently.
"I'm in town for the tournament. I only came to make sure my family was well. How foolish of me to think I'd find a welcome."
He tossed the frozen cube into the hearth and turned to go. Barriss didn't speak, not until Alucard was at the garden doors.
"I would have let you rot in that jail."
A small, bitter smile touched the edge of Alucard's mouth.
"Good thing it wasn't up to you."
With that, he stormed out. Lila straightened atop the wall and rounded the perimeter to find Alucard standing on a broad balcony overlooking the grounds. Beyond the wall, she could make out the arc of the palace, the diffused glow of the river. Alucard's face was a mask of icy calm, bordering on disinterest, but his fingers gripped the balcony's edge, knuckles white. Lila didn't make a sound, and yet Alucard sighed and said,
"It isn't polite to spy."
Damn it! She'd forgotten about his gift for seeing the magic in people. It would make a handy skill for a thief, and Lila wondered, not for the first time, if there was a way to steal talents the way one did trinkets. She stepped off the low wall onto the edge of the patio rail before dropping soundlessly to the terrace beside him. "Captain," she said, half greeting and half apology.
"Still simply looking after your interests?" he asked,
but he didn't sound angry. "You're not upset," she observed. Alucard raised a brow, and she found herself missing the familiar wink of blue.
"I suppose not. Besides, my excursions were fairly innocuous compared to yours."
"You followed me?" snapped Lila. Alucard chuckled.
"You hardly have a right to sound affronted."
Lila shook her head, silently grateful she hadn't decided to march into the palace and surprise Kel. Truth be told, she still hadn't decided when she would see him, if she would see him, but when and if she did. She certainly didn't want Alucard there spying on them. Kel was somebody here, a royal, a saint, even if she could only think of him as the silly smuggler who frowned too much and nearly got them both killed.
"What are you grinning about?"
"Nothing," said Lila, leveling her expression. "So, Luke?"
"Huh? It's a nickname. Surely they have those wherever you're from. And for the record, I prefer Alucard or Captain Emery."
"Does the crew know?"
"Know what?"
"That you're..." She gestured to the estate, searching for the word.
"It's hardly a secret, Bard. Most Arnesians have heard of the House of Emery."
He gave her a look that said, "Odd, isn't it, that you haven't?"
"Haven't you heard them calling me Vestra?"
Lila had. "I just assumed it was a slur, like Pils." Alucard laughed soundlessly.
"Maybe it is, to them. It means royal."
"Like a prince?" He gave a humorless laugh.
"What a disappointment I must be to you. I know you wanted a pirate. You should have conned your way aboard a different ship. But don't worry. There are many doors between my person and the throne, and I have no desire to see them opened."
Lila chewed her lip. "But if everyone knows, then why sneak about like a thief?" His gaze drifted back to the garden wall.
"Because there are other people in this city, Bard. Some I don't care to see, and some I'd rather not see me."
"What's this?" she teased. "The great Alucard Emery has enemies?"
"Comes with the trade, I fear."
"It's hard to imagine you meeting someone you couldn't charm." His eyes narrowed.
"You say that like it's not a compliment."
"Perhaps it's not." An uncomfortable silence began to settle. "Nice house," said Lila. It was the wrong thing to have said. His expression hardened.
"I hope you'll forgive me for not inviting you in and introducing you to my esteemed family. It might be tricky to explain the sudden presence of a girl in a man's suit with the ability to speak the royal tongue, but not the grace to use the front door."
Lila bit back a reply. She felt dismissed, but as she stepped up onto the balcony's edge, Alucard said,
"Wait."
And there was something in his voice that she barely recognized, because she'd never heard it from him before. Sincerity. She twisted back, and she saw him haloed by the light from the room behind, framed by the doorway. He was little more than a silhouette, a simplified portrait of a nobleman, a picture of what someone should be, not what they were. Then Alucard stepped forward, away from the light and into the shadows with her. This version of him looked real, looked right. And Lila understood. When he said wait, what he meant was, wait for me.
"I suppose we should both be getting back," he added, aiming for indifference but falling short.
"Shouldn't you say goodbye?"
"I've never been a fan of farewells. Or hellos, for that matter. Unnecessary punctuation. Besides, they'll see me again."
Lila looked back at the house. "Won't Anissa be upset?"
"Oh, I imagine so. I'm afraid I'm accustomed to her disappointment."
"But what about no more questions, Lila?" he said.
"I'm tired."
The last protests cooled to ash on her tongue as Alucard stepped up onto the banister beside her, and then in a single, effortless stride, onto the low wall. It was narrow, but he moved with sure-footed ease atop it. He didn't even look down to check his steps.
"I grew up here," he said, reading her surprise. "If there's a way in or out, I've tried it."
They slipped along the garden wall and down into the courtyard, hugging the shadows until they were safely beyond the gate. Alucard set off down the street without looking back, but Lila cast a glance at the grand estate. The truth was, Lila understood why Alucard did it, why he traded safety and boredom for adventure. She didn't know what it felt like to be safe, and she'd never had the luxury of being bored. But it was like she'd once told Kel. People either stole to stay alive or to feel alive. She had to imagine that they ran away for the same reasons. Lila jogged to catch up and fell in step beside the captain, the street quiet save for the sounds of their boots. She cheated a sideways glance, but Alucard's gaze was straight ahead and far away. She used to hate people like him. People who gave up something good, shucked warm meals and solid roofs as if they didn't matter. But then Baron died, and Lila realized that in a way she'd done the same thing. Run away from what could have been a good life, or at least a happy one. Because it wasn't enough to be happy. Not for Lila. She wanted more. Wanted an adventure. She used to think that if she stole enough, the want would fade. The hunger would go away. But maybe it wasn't that simple. Maybe it wasn't a matter of what she didn't have, of what she wasn't, but what she was. Maybe she wasn't the kind of person who stole to stay alive. Maybe she just did it for the thrill. And that scared her, because it meant she didn't need to do it, couldn't justify it, could have stayed at the stone's throw, could have saved Baron's life. It was a slippery slope, that kind of thinking, one that ended in a cliff. So Lila backed away. She was who she was. And Alucard Emery? Well, he was a man with secrets of his own, and she couldn't fault him that.